This is MSO News Sports, and we're back with basketball insider Mike Renier now. And, Mike, welcome back. How are you doing?
We're doing fine. If we can just get the winter over with, I think we'd all feel better.
I thought you were going to say get the wind over with. The wind is brutal.
That's true.
Oh, my goodness. Mike, we're going to start with two names I'm going to throw at you right away, and I'm just going to let you run free fall, okay?
One at a time?
No, I'm going to throw both at you, and you take the order, whatever you want. I'm going to throw Caitlin Clark and Jason Tatum.
Jason Tatum and Caitlin Clark. Well, it seems like an oxymoron. Like they don't connect there in some ways, but they do connect, and they're both great players. Caitlin Clark, of course, is a senior player at the University of Iowa women's basketball team. And even though she's a senior, she's eligible to play next year. But the landmark moment for Caitlin Clark occurred last night, Thursday night, whatever this is, February 15th or whatever it is, when she knocked off 49 points against Michigan. More importantly, the landmark was that she surpassed any woman in college basketball history with the most points in a career, 3,528. But now, of course, she's broken that by another 40 points. And not only did she do it in dramatic fashion before 15,000 fans at Iowa, but she hit her first three shots. So she had those 8 points that she needed to break the record. Kelsey Plum had the record previously. She broke it in the first 2.5 minutes, but she went on to break a school record with 49 points and her own personal high of 48 points established a year or so ago. So she did it on three levels last night. You can't get more dramatic than that. Unfortunately, the game was not nationally televised. It was only on the Peacock streaming network, which I know people are subscribing to, but I wouldn't know how to do that, Rick, and I don't know if you would.
No, hell no.
No, but we saw plenty of highlights, and she is such a phenomenal player. I mean, she did it, and she didn't force the issue. By that, I mean it came in the flow of the game, which is what you want to see. She shot 16 for 31, which is very good. She was 9 for 18 on three-pointers. And as anyone who's seen her play knows, those aren't conventional three-pointers. A lot of the three-pointers she takes are what they call logo threes.
You know, I got to interrupt you right there. I was going to say, there's a new term in the sports lexicon that I just learned today, and it's the logo three. And then I watched a video of it, so now I know what the logo three is.
Now, the logo three is, for people who don't know, is, you know, a player comes over half court, and they're well behind the three-point line, and they're sort of where the logos are on various courts, whether they be college or professional. You know, we might have the Celtics logo, or in the case of Caitlin Clark, the Iowa logo. It's well behind the three-point line. But she's comfortable taking that shot because she's been taking it her whole life, her entire career at Iowa. So now, here's a great question, Rick, is that now that she's surpassed every woman who's ever played college basketball, she is only 99 points behind Pete Maravich.
Wow, yep.
The late Pete Maravich, who played at LSU. For the all-time men and women college scoring. And, you know, I have Caitlin Clark, the greatest player I've ever seen, women, and by far, it's not even close. Even though all those UConn women, and I know Tim Curran loves the UConn basketball program, but to me, Caitlin Clark has more range, and she has brought more women's basketball into the spotlight as an ambassador than anybody in the history of college basketball. And she's only 99 points behind the all-time scoring mark of Pete Maravich. But here's the thing. Pete Maravich only played 3 years at LSU because back in those late 60s and early 70s, freshmen were not eligible to play. That was the rule. That was the NCAA rule. Mm-hmm. And also, there was no three-point shot. So Pete Maravich scored, all his scoring came in 3 years, and he averaged 44 points per game. All right? So Caitlin Clark will break his record. She could even, I think she's got like 5 regular season games left. She could easily break his all-time scoring record. But for me, mentally anyway, it would come with an asterisk.
Mm-hmm.
As great as Caitlin Clark is, you know, it's men's basketball is different than women's basketball. Again, because of those factors of Maravich only playing 3 years of college ball, averaging 44 points a game, no three-point shot. He played for his father, Press Maravich, and those games weren't on TV back then. You know, you had to sort of get your reports from Sports Illustrated, right, Rick? Good old Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
Or you got it from the Associated Press on your when you read the Boston Globe or the Boston Herald or whatever. That's the only way you found out about Pete Maravich. And you'd see an occasional highlight film or whatever. But this guy was an incredible scoring machine. But I think that Caitlin Clark deserves in the conversation from the standpoint of an unconventional scorer. Maravich had all these fancy passes he could make. He shot from long distance. Caitlin Clark does it from logo threes, conventional threes. And not only that, Rick, last night in breaking the record, she also had 13 assists, which is a tremendous total. That tells me that she probably passed up some makeable shots because she's such a great passer. She found some teammates underneath. I've seen her play enough this year where she spots the open person and fires a pass, like much like Jokic or Larry Bird that did. Mm-hmm. She fires these bullet passes to open teammates for easy baskets. So she's the complete package, and she's the reason that Iowa is ranked number four. And, of course, Iowa went to the final game last year, lost to LSU in the national championship game. And, of course, they have a shot at reaching the Final Four again. So all kudos to Caitlin Clark. She deserves every accolade she gets from here on out.
All right, great stuff, and I appreciate the history on Maravich, because I didn't realize it was a 3-year thing, and you needed to remind me about, you know, the 3-point play that he didn't have that. So that's
a 3-point basket thing.
Great comparison, and it's great to put that in perspective. Now moving on to Jason Tatum, you mentioned the word assist. I think we've talked about this before. I saw something in the Globe today about his. They called it unselfish play, and I don't like that. Somebody else had a better term for it. It's playing for the benefit of the team, doing better, you know?
True.
But anyway, it seems to me, watching that, and you got to comment on that 50-point game too, but that Tatum is consistently making really good decisions, and he's making the guys around him better.
No, I agree with that, because to me that's where his game has improved as a passer and also as a rebounder. And even I've noticed a big difference on defense this year. He makes that second effort on defense. He scraps over and double teams a player, not just his individual defense, but he's good at a help defense. And he's improved his overall game. And I think sometimes those are little subtleties. We notice it if you're watching closely, but people who watch the game in general, who even the ones who pay $500 a ticket to go to the Garden, they say, oh, we want to see Jason Tatum score 41 like he did a few games ago. But they don't notice his assists. They don't notice his rebounding. They don't notice his help defense. And to me, of course, the coaching staff is the first ones to recognize how improved he is in those areas. And in the long run, Rick, what it means is the Celtics have a better shot in the playoffs of going the distance because he's a better all-around player. He's sort of outdistanced Jaylen Brown. I know we talk about him as a secondary scorer and all that stuff, but to me, Jason Tatum has improved his game more than Jaylen Brown has, and that's no knock on Jaylen Brown. It's just that Tatum has taken that extra step, and I think he's ready to carry that team to the finals. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that, and I think what my eyes have noticed is that it's almost like a natural flow now that he has in terms of, okay, do I go to the basket? Do I dish it off? Do I take the three-pointer? Do I do the – there's less and less ISO. But when he does the ISO, he knows what he's doing, and he usually hits it. And then, as you say, man, he's often the first guy back on defense.
He is. And I just noticed the way he scraps on defense. And there was a game, a close game recently. It might have even been that Nets game. They only won by 8 points, not the one by 50, but the one by 8. It was late in the game. It was still close. He double-teamed somebody and stole the ball, and it was like a 6-point game at the time, and I said to myself, that's an important play,
mm-hmm.
because it came with late in the game, and the Nets were still in the picture, possibly overtaking the Celtics, but no, he shut him down, and he's just playing better in overall defense, and I also think he knows when a teammate is hot, and he can take a couple minutes off from shooting the ball. In other words, like Derek White, for example, he gets hot, and Tatum notices that, and he says, oh, okay, I don't have to take that three-pointer. Derek White's going to be open, and he can hit the three-pointer. I think that's a great way to basically generate goodwill among your teammates. I mean, I think he has it anyway, but he knows when his teammates are open, and he's going to, like we've said it before, sometimes he's going to cede the authority to take the three-pointer, and he'll pass it over to Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, who had 28 points a couple nights ago against the Nets. It doesn't matter who's hot, but Tatum will find him. So and he'll still end up with 26, 28 points yeah. on those particular nights.
And okay. Yeah, and double figures in rebounds.
Correct.
I think what's cool, especially the other night in that 50-point blowout of Brooklyn, was the trust that the starters have, like in Sam Hauser or in Peyton Pritchard, because most, you know, Sam Hauser ended up starting the game. He didn't get a lot of looks in the first half, but he was still there, and they trusted him, and they certainly trusted Peyton Pritchard. And what about Luke Kornet? He's playing out of his mind.
Luke Kornet is playing out of his mind. He's that guy that you, at the beginning of the season, based on what he had done before, even though he showed moments last year of playing well underneath the basket. At the beginning of the season, you wouldn't think he played as big a role as he has been playing this season. That means on nights when Porzingis doesn't play or Horford doesn't play, he can give you a good, not just 6 minutes, but more like 18, 20 minutes. And he'll wind up with 8 or 10 points and 6 or 7 rebounds and blocking shots, too. That's, to me, has been the most surprising aspect of his game, is that he's taking on driving players who are driving hard to the basket, and he's putting his arms out there, and he's got the length to block shots, and he's been blocking shots. So that's been the surprise element, a really pleasant surprise for the Celtics, I think, has been Kornet's play. Although I think what we're going to see the second half, well, we can't call it the second half of the season. After the All-Star break, Rick,
yeah.
we're two-thirds of the way through the season,
right.
actually.
Right.
So therefore, I think what we're going to see, though, in the final third of the season is the guy they got from the Memphis Grizzlies, Xavier Tillman,
mm-hmm.
who's kind of a long 6'7", 6'8" guy. He's a rugged defensive player. You're not going to see much offense out of him, I don't think. But he can take on those big, strong centers that the Celtics will face down the stretch, whether it be Adebayo or Giannis Antetokounmpo of Milwaukee. He's more physically suited than Kornet is to take on strength versus strength. That means that Mazzulla can spot Kornet against players that he knows he can defend. You know,
mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I think it's all around a great move by the Celtics. I think this Tillman guy could help down the stretch, and we'll find out soon enough when they resume play after the All-Star nonsense of the weekend.
Okay, now I'm going to throw you a curveball. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Which comes first, chemistry and winning, or winning and chemistry? Because they're obviously interconnected.
Yeah.
And I think it's certainly easier to have chemistry when you're winning. But
yes.
Does the chemistry allow you to win? I mean, you understand the question I'm trying to ask?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think the chemistry does allow you to win. And I think that I see that primarily from the Denver Nuggets because of what they did last year. And, you know, it's not automatic that you're going to repeat the following year or even be a contender. But yet, even from the get-go this year, I saw the chemistry that the Denver Nuggets had. And they had it all throughout last season. I think at some point, when the right mix of players is in there, they either gel or they don't gel, on and off the court.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at some point last year, the Denver Nuggets figured out, hey, we're gelling on the court, and we're also gelling off the court, meaning we have chemistry both on and off the court. And I think, so to answer your question, I think maybe the chemistry, you can have a winning team and still have no chemistry. The Celtics were a winning team when Kyrie Irving was there.
Good point, good point.
No yep. chemistry. I think that's a perfect example.
Yep.
There was no chemistry whatsoever. And I remember reading comments even recently by Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum that they were kind of overwhelmed by the presence of Kyrie Irving. And being so young, they weren't going to speak up to Brad Stevens or the coaching staff about what's this guy doing taking over the team. They were trying to establish themselves. I'm talking about Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyrie Irving was all over the map. Yes, I'm going to play for Boston for the next 45 years. No, I'm only going to be here for 2 weeks. I'm going to take 2 months off during the All-Star break. He was all over the map. So I think it was hard to integrate those young players into that sort of mindset. And Kyrie marched to his own drummer. And to this day, 2024, he's still marching to his own drummer.
Yeah.
So we're glad to be rid of him. But there was certainly no chemistry, even though the Celtics were a very good winning team when Kyrie Irving was there.
Great point.
It's a much better mix of players and chemistry right now than it has been over the last even 5 or 6 years.
Oh, yeah. Very enjoyable to watch. And I think as we wind this down, Mike, a couple of other thoughts. The 50-point margin, it seems like on any given night you can win by 50 or lose by 50.
Right. But I guess when the Celtics did it against the Nets, the other night. Although the Nets were missing Ben Simmons, Rick, you know. And I say that euphemistically because Ben Simmons, the previous night in Brooklyn when the Celtics only won by eight, the Celtics were hacking him, the whole hack-a-shack strategy, because he's such a poor free-throw shooter. They were purposely putting him on the foul line in a close game, knowing he was going to miss one or both shots. And each time he did miss one. So Ben Simmons has been such a bust in this league as a draft pick. And you can go back to his days with Philadelphia and Embiid, and I'm sure Joel Embiid would say the same thing. But winning by 50 the following night when Ben Simmons wasn't there didn't surprise me at all because the Nets looked like they were already on vacation in terms of the All-Star break, and the Celtics still meant business. The Celtics, I think, are very intent on finishing with the best record in the NBA so that when it comes to the playoffs, should they reach the finals, they would have home court against whether it be the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have the best record in the Western Conference right now, or the Denver Nuggets, or the L.A. Clippers, or whoever. But I think the Celtics' goal, their mission, you know, as long as they don't overuse their players like Porzingis and Tatum doesn't play too many minutes and Jaylen Brown doesn't play too many minutes, the Celtics' intention is to have the best record in the NBA. And they're well on their way. When I last checked, the Milwaukee Bucks lost last night, a bad loss to Memphis. They're like 6.5, 7 games behind. The Knicks have fallen back. The Cleveland Cavaliers have been playing great.
Yep.
But they're still like 5, 5.5 games behind the Celtics. And the Minnesota Timberwolves are the closest to the Celtics in terms of overall record. I believe they're 4 or 4.5 games behind. That's still a pretty good cushion right now as the Celtics gear up for their final 27 games.
Well, any final observations, Mike, about the league or the Celtics? Because it has been fun. I'm probably not going to watch much of the All-Star weekend, and I wish Jaylen Brown were not participating in the slam dunk contest. But what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are the same as you. I hope Jaylen Brown, I wish he was not, but I'm sure he will participate in the slam dunk. But that'll be over with, hopefully, without him getting injured. But my concluding thought before the All-Star break is that I hope the Celtics can keep Porzingis healthy. I hope Porzingis can keep himself healthy for the final 27 games. I think he's played 40 of the 55 games, which isn't too bad, and I know some of the absences have been due to the Celtics, you know, playing it cautiously with him and having him sit, but he's such a valuable piece of that five-man puzzle, averaging 20 points. He's having his best year in many ways, his shooting percentage, he's blocking shots, playing great defense, dunking the ball, and he loves being, you talk about chemistry, I think he's fit in beautifully with Tatum and the whole group in terms of getting along on the court. Their on-court chemistry is great. So to me, a big factor coming down the stretch would be to keep Porzingis healthy and have him healthy going, completely healthy going into the playoffs. I think that's going to be a major factor when they go into the postseason.
Which brings up another question. I thought I was done, but or at least a thought. Management, time management, game management, it seems to me that if there's one thing that Mazzulla is doing right, it's resting players at the right time. And they're not overtaxing Horford. They're not overtaxing Porzingis. Tatum gets a night off. Every now and then, Brown gets a night off. And he's gone through the entire lineup with guys getting nights off.
I agree. And I think that he's trying not to overuse Tatum and have him play 38, 39, 40 minutes. I think there was a close game I was watching recently where the other team was getting closer and closer, and Tatum was still on the bench in the fourth quarter. But Mazzulla was determined to keep him on there on the bench until there were like 6.5, 7 minutes left in the game, which is like the proper time to put him back in because Tatum usually plays most of the third quarter. So I thought it was a wise move. It shows Mazzulla maybe growing in maturity in terms of how to manage the player's time. And, of course, he had to learn on the job, on the fly last year, Mazzulla, about managing players' time. And there's a lot of players to manage, Rick, right?
Yeah. So
players tweak they tweak injuries, and they might have to sit out for a while or miss a game. Mazzulla has to go to plan B. But I think he's very conscious, especially of resting both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, and he's done a magnificent job with Al Horford, I think. He looks 3 or 4 years younger than his chronological age. He's running around. He blocks shots. He hits the three-pointer. I think he's having a tremendous season.
You know, he reminds me of the Celtics version of Patrice Bergeron because he's just everywhere, and he's such a great leader. I love it.
You know, you want to talk chemistry. He's the most team – really, I go back to the 1970s and covering the Celtics, and I think Al Horford is one of the most team-oriented guys that's ever been part of the Boston Celtics.
Wow. Well, that's a true Celtic. All right. Mike, I hate to cut it short, but I got to run. We're going to do it again next week, yep. And I really love talking Celtics with you, man. I appreciate it.
All right. You're very welcome. You guys have a great weekend, and I hope not too many people are going to watch the All-Star game because it's just a phony game.
I know. I can't stand it. I'd rather they all go to Florida for a week or whatever, you know?
That's true.
Okay, Mike, thank you very much. Be well, and I'll talk soon.
Okay, Rick, take care.
Thanks, Mike. All right, that's Mike Grenier, our basketball insider. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore.